Hello, everybody. This is Tim Green with Rattle Magazine. Welcome to Rattlecast number 91. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, before we begin, I should say that Rattle is a publication of the Rattle Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit working to promote the practice of poetry. We've been in continuous publication since 1995 and are unaffiliated with any other organization. We just do this because we think hanging out with a poet every Tuesday night is a lot of fun, and we know you do too, so please do click the like button and share. Make sure you're subscribed. If you're watching this later on iTunes, give us a review. Make sure you're following us on Facebook. Make sure you're hitting the bell and stuff on YouTube. Wherever you're watching this or something you can do, please do it now. Now, today's guest, like I mentioned, is Tanya Kohong. She appeared in two issues of Rattle, and her most recent book is The War Still Within, Poems of the Korean Diaspora. Tanya Kohong is a poet, translator, and cultural curator who champions bilingual poetry and poets. Born and raised in South Korea, she immigrated to the United States at the age of 18. She's the author of four books of poems, including this most recent one, and is the recipient of the Yoon Dunju Korean American Literature Award. Tanya has an MFA from Antioch University and is a PhD student in mythical studies at Pacifica Graduate Institute. She lives in Southern California with her husband and three children. And here she is, Tanya Kohong. Hello, Tanya. How are you doing today?
Hi, how are you? I'm doing really, really good.
Yeah, I'm doing great, and it's great to see you. You know, we met for the first time at a writer's retreat.
Yes.
And that was just one of the greatest experiences. It was so fun to be in Spain there. And
Mallorca.
Yeah, it really is. But it's so great to see you again. I haven't seen you that often since then. Do you want to start out with a poem?
Oh, yes. So I think I'm going to be honored to read the poem that Dear Yobo, which is like a publishing letter 46, winter 2014. And Tim, that you recorded and then played that Dear Yobo. And then I was like, oh my goodness, I could hear trembling voice. And then I was nervous and it was like amazing, but I thought that was so cute too. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, that's funny. That's so interesting.
So I wouldn't have thought of that. And then it's going to be in the book page 37.
Okay.
Dear Yobo, when you say ramen, then I am ramen. When you say tea, I am tea. When you take off your clothes, I take off my clothes. If I could leave my senses, I could be no trouble. You don't give food to the fish you've caught. You no longer need to hold me. Please drink your tea. And the yobo is a Korean term mean darling and honey. And so that is I wanted to share with you first. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a very moving, very simple poem. And emblematic, I think, of your style, which is very simple and straightforward and sort of sparsely cut down to the heart of the story. Do you want to explain a little bit about what the book is about, The War Still Within? There's, of course, the huge, the big section in the middle talking about comfort women. And in general, it's about sort of women's experiences through the Korean diaspora. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Would you share like the picture that I sent on the share, like Park Jung Shim.
Yeah, so this picture is the cover, and then that's a cropped version of this picture, which I'll put up.
Yes.
Right now.
So I think like this cover book, like when people pick up this book, and then they will say like, "Oh, what is that?" And that is actually for comfort women. They're during World War II. There was like 200,000 to 300,000. Women, they're like slave force to the World War II to sex slaver, and they're silent. They've been silent for so many years, and for the first time, 1991, Park Sung Kim came announced, and then she said, "I was the comfort woman." The reason she did it. It's because Japanese were keep saying, no, we didn't force them to come to the sex slavery. They came themselves and to make money and then all that kind of stuff. And then for the first time, Park Sung Kim came and then say, no, it wasn't voluntary. A lot of times that was forced. And then the reason I wrote the poem was that when I was in MFA, I didn't even know about the comfort women. And then somehow I was start like writing women poems, like looking for, I was studying and then what is women poets like, artists like, especially for Korean artists. And then I was digging to more deep and then like studying about the women artists from Korea. And then somehow I found about this article and then I wasn't even able to sleep. And then I just couldn't see all these pictures that got there. And then so I was like, oh my goodness, what I can do? It was just like a really disrupting emotionally and historically that I was ashamed that I didn't know about it. And then I didn't do anything about it. And it took me a long time to even talking to myself, am I allowed to write this poem? Because I feel like I don't know how to write this poem. And then like, if am I going to honor them to write this poem? So then I research and then I read a lot of interviews. And then I'll find more sources. And then what I wanted to do is that I wanted to give them a voice. And the reason the Haksan Kim and then other women couldn't say that I was come from women, it is like suppress of the cultural background. Women not supposed to be get that happen. And then even though that happened, they you be silent. Sharing and opening up all that information, whether they get support, a lot of times they don't get support for that. So they knew the culturally. So I wanted to show in my poem to share how they maybe felt during all this time. Even they left, like lived like 50, 40 years, if some people get married, they don't even share that pains with their family. And also a lot of people, they didn't even married. And it was just like an honor to write that poem and then share. And then after I shared this poem, and then like so many my other friends say, thank you for like writing this poem, because they didn't even know about the comfort women. And I think this is like very important, not just like for comfort women, but like for women who couldn't speak their experience and then all that what was going through happened to their lives. So that's very important. So that's why like we choose to put this cover page with the comfort women. So long explanation for
No, it's just such a shocking story. And two, just reading the Wikipedia page about it. You know, I don't know how common it is that people know about this or not, because I've known you were writing about this when we first met, I think, and so it's been something that I've known about since then for maybe 8 years or however long ago that is. Mm-hmm. But I was sort of surprised at how few. It's the kind of thing that would be like should be in novels and movies and historical accounts, and there's really not that much about it. And it's just shocking to read even just this book or just the Wikipedia page and learn about how the women were treated. And the explanation was that it was to prevent rape during war, so we had to have these comfort stations, and they would recruit women to. They would tell them that they were going to get an education or have a job here as a waitress or something, and then they would end up being stuck in these places being sex slaves for the Japanese Imperial Army. And there's so little known. Even the numbers are so, we're not even sure how many were there. I mean, estimates range a huge variation. It's just such a fascinating topic. How was it that you found out about it? Was there something that brought it to your awareness?
I was like finding out that because I was like actually the GI, when Korean, I mean, American GI came to the Korea, and there's the part like they call, you know, GI, you know, girlfriends, and, you know, or like, you know, helping GI, the, you know, stations or whatever. So I actually grew up in Seoksu-dong. It's like the town that like we had the army, the American army. So that I was like a little, but like I was to see that, you know, the women was like, you know, with the GIs, and then I saw that how they get treated by Korean people. And, you know, like just seeing that part. And then I thought, So I was like, actually in this book, there's like a poem about the Yanggongju, they call like, you know, Yanggongju, they call Yanggongju. So that I was like wrote about that poem. And then while I was like searching, and that was like a follow to Comfort Women. And I, at the time, I really absolutely didn't know about the Comfort Women. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, actually, we think like there's a lot of people knows about Comfort Women. But actually, I find out that not many people knows about it. And just recently, the Harvard professor Ramji say that Comfort Women is the process. So that was like big issues, arguments, and then, you know, all that kind of stuff is came out. So actually, I'm going to speak more about these issues later on. But then exactly. And now 1991, it's like about 258 women came forward. And then they said, were the Comfort Women. That was 1991. And then when I was start writing, Tim, you remember like about 50 some women was surviving, and then now I think less than 20 Comfort Women is surviving, and then they're very not, you know, healthy. And then I think really I feel they deserve the apology, you know, at least that's what's pretty important for them to hear.
Yeah.
And then go peace with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to read a few more poems?
Yes. So since like, we don't know, but like, I think like since we talked about it, and then maybe some portion that I'm going to read about Comfort Woman, that. Because Comfort Woman is page 17 in this book. Do you want me to just read a whole session, or do you think that that's too much?
No, I think that'd be good if you,
Yeah, because since we talked about a lot about these issues, like, because I wanted to explain what was the setting. The setting was like, Hak-sun Kim is like, she came like 1991, and it's like this the thing, like, I felt like it's so heartbreak. The reason is, I know they live alone, and they don't talk about their lives with other people. Mm. And it's the part, like, I wanted to share, like, noodle-bap. It's like the kind of things, like the burnt rice. And they're eating alone. Why? Because they don't feel like they're worth it. Mm. That's the thing I wanted to give them. You are worth, you know. So I think I'm going to just start and reading it. Thank you for giving this time. I think this is going to be really important. 1991, Seoul, South Korea. So it's in page 18. The voice of TV is comforting, like having a person beside me, talking all the time while I eat my burnt rice grill, suddenly in Japanese. But we didn't. Those women came to us. For the money, we never forced. I dropped my spoon into my noodle-bap. On the screen, a photograph of young girls sit in open truck, like the one I rode with Sunja over the rice field road years ago. 3 a.m., walking in a cold sweat, I glove jariki, burka, burka, but my throat still burns. I reach for cigarette and white smoke spirals. Like a Sunja wandering soul. They call me Weambu, a comfort woman, but I had a name. 1939, Jinju, South, Gyeongsang Province. We are going to Sanambari, right? No, Jeongsindae, Women's Labor Corps. Same thing, right? Earn money, become new women, come back home soon. Holding tiny hands, fingertips, bungsunga, blossom flower red, colored by summer's end. Ripening persimmons, bending over the choga roofs, fade into distance. When the truck crosses the last hill, leaving our hometown in the dust, Sunja kicks off her wet shoes. 1991, the autumn night, Japanese soldiers whittling swords dragged me away. I was gathering pine needles that fell from my basket, filling the air with the scent on their white blood. When you scream in your dreams, there's no sound. On the maru, grandma's making songpyeong, asking mom, is it water boiling? Will she bring pine needles before? My eyeballs fall out. I feel pain there. They put a long stick between my legs. Open up, open, baka jusenjin. They rage, spraying their sperm. The smell of a burning dog, burning life, panting, grunting on top of me. Under my blood, I am dying. 1943, Shanghai, China. One night, a soldier asked all the girls, who can do 100 men? I raised my hand. Sunja did not. The soldiers put her in boiling water alive and fed us. What is living? Is Sunja living in me? 1946, Jinju, Korea. 1 year after liberation, I came home, short hair, not wearing hanbok, not speaking clearly. Mother hid me in the bedroom. At night, she took me to the well and washed me. Scars sealed with hot steel, like burnt bark, like roots of old trees all over my body. Under the crescent glow, she smiled when she washed me. My baby, your skin is like white jade, dazzling. She bit her lower lip, washing my belly softly. But they had ripped open my womb with a baby inside. Mother made white rice and seaweed soup, put my favorite white fish on top. But mother, I can't eat flesh. That night in the granary, she hanged herself, left a little bag in my room, my dowry with a rice ball. Father threw it at me, waved his hand towards the door. I left at dusk, 30 years, 40 years, forever, mute, mute, mute. Bury it with me. They call me Weambu. I had a name. '91, 3 a.m. That night, the thousand blue stars became white butterflies. Threw ripped rice paper and flew into my room. 1,000 butterflies, endless white butterflies going through the web in my mouth, into my unhealed red scars, stitching one by one, butterflies lifting me, heavier than dead, butterflies opening my bedroom door, heavier than she. At dawn, I stand.
And that was Comfort Women, the long sequence on this subject from The War Still Within by Tanya Ko Hong. Just such a powerful poem. You know, I should mention, if anybody has any comments or questions for Tanya, I will pass them along. I already know some interesting comments. Sakai Manning says, America is no different, so let's be real about the exploitation and misogyny committed against women in countries where we have historically placed troops. Yeah. And also, the Japanese government has formally apologized, but it was parsed in a less than acceptable way. And and that's one thing that I don't know. I mean, I'm not really, you know, I'm not well versed in this. I just read a Wikipedia article in your book. But the Japanese government apologized and paid, I think it was $800 million in sort of reparations for what they did. But then the Korean government, rather than giving it out to the actual people who were victimized, used that money to sort of industrialize the nation. So it's really interesting. I mean, I don't know if I'm just projecting this, but it seems like in a way that the money, that money was used to, you know, for business and making Korea the sort of industrial powerhouse that it is. Yeah. I don't know how much that's related, but just interesting to think about.
And also, I think actually that while like the former president Park Geun-hye was there, and then what I understood was that the Japanese wanted to pay, and then they wanted to say, so then like we pay and then we're not going to apologize, but it's done. That was like what happened. But so that was like, I think, a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just share a little bit part of the poem, because this is like a really cultural context in it here. That some people may be like, oh, okay, I don't understand. But like, that's why I wanted to thank you so much for this time, because I just really need to explain. I feel like that's my part to share the part. It's like, as I say, the first page 18, the rice grill, that is like the for a lot of very eating simply. And then that used to be Korean women, they eat like leftover. So that is like a symbol of like how she simply living there. And then that was exactly what happened. She was watching TV, the Hakseong Kim. And then on the news, the Japanese say like, oh no, we didn't do it, you know. And then this woman came for the money, and that's why she dropped the spoon. And then went to say, I am a come from women. And the next page, like 1939, that part was that was like a sanambari. Sanambari is that they made like 1,000 speeches for the soldiers. So then like a symbolic that like it just like when you have like 1,000 speeches inside, that you get protected. So they went there to sewing. And Jeongsinde is like one of the corp there, saying like, you come there and then you're working. Women's corp, that's their way of the crew, they're like, you know, come from women. And also the Bungsunga is like the little, like the flower, beautiful flower. And then the women, they put the like, you know, with the fingernails and all that kind of stuff. So like, I just wanted to show these women are like just sweet girls, and then ripping persimmon, like, you know, choga leaves, like the on the Korean the roofs, like just beautiful with the persimmon, you know. And I think this was like just a really important scene. Sunja kicks off her white shoes, means like when they committed suicide or something, that they take their shoes off. So that I wanted to share that. And then also why the pine needles and songpyeon, that's the part that I wanted to share with you. That was pine needle is like a songpyeon, is like a Korean rice cake. And then during Chuseok, we make the rice cake. And when you steam rice cake inside, like, you know, the sweet sugar and then walnut, you know, things like that inside. But then put the pine needle, and then when you steam, it just smells so good. So as a child myself, that I go gather pine needles, so like for chusa, Thanksgiving. And so this girl went to get the pine needle, and then she never came back. And actually, that happens, like according to my research, 1943, that was like a happening. That was a happen. So, and also, I wanted to just share how they feel rejected and shamed by their family. That's one of the part is very hard. And also, even though it's not their fault, and they feel shame for what happened to them. And that is just so hard to share. So thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a powerful sequence in a powerful book. I mean, the book, you know, there's a way that you move through image in the sort of the sparseness of language that really makes it strong. How did you become a poet? You know, what did you, how long have you been writing, and when, what drew you to poetry, and what is your style? How do you approach writing this as a poem?
That is just like very interesting, because I think I remember like when I was little, even though like really, really little, I start like writing, and then I'm making stories. And then even though it's just like a little, I just go sit sunsets and like I wanted to write something. And then, you know, I grew up in Korea, and then I came to United States, and I thought, oh my God, how am I going to become a writer? Because I left Korea, I'm not going to write in Korean. And then, oh my goodness, I just barely speaking English. How am I going to write in English? And at the time, there are a lot of like movement, like, you know, immigrants is coming to, you know, United States. So there's a Korean newspaper. And then I found like this contest about the poets. And I thought this is like very well known for our society, Korean society. But when I say these things, like people say, oh, really? To be a poet in Korea and Korean people, you have to win the contest. You cannot just say, oh, I wrote a poem and then, you know, I'm a poet now. No, you have to win the contest, or like you have to go major, like kind of rattle poetry to publish your poem, then you're a poet. So when you put the name, my Korean name, Go Hyun Hae, then I am registered as a Korean poet. So I become a poet very young age, 1987. And I was like writing in Korean, only Korean. And then I start like, you know, learn English. And then my friends were saying, hey, you know, you're a poet. And then even my friends, like, you know, in college, they came to listen to me, and then with all first generation, like all the Korean poets, and then they came and listened to me in Korean. But they say, okay, can you just translate it in, you know, English? So that's how I start translated. But then I translated, you know, in the book, and then in Korean publishing company, they translate both Korean and English. But actually, I didn't know anything about how to publish in you know, our magazines and things like that. So actually, 2014, and then when I was in NTA University, that's how I start know to submit and then publish. So like, I think the beginning of that year was the start publishing, but the thing was like, I been writing in Korean, and then it was just really, really hard to translate to English. And it was just like a very important process to me. So first I wrote Korean, and then that was like a different language. It's like it's a body of language. It's like just changing so much. And then there was a point a lot of people going through. I just like totally reject of like my Koreanness one time, so that I don't eat Korean food, I don't speak Korean, and then I try to do all like writing in English. And then I think while I was doing it, like I just find that like, oh, I just really don't know who am I. And I think maybe it's a good time to read like a gap. Is that possible?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, like because I think this will like help to show, like, you know, I showed to you the team. So like this one, because I think this is like not many people experience. And then I think as an immigrant, and then I think it's just like I am maybe different writer because of my experience and where I came from. So this is actually the gap was like, I think first writing in English poem that I was writing, translating. And then I said, oh, I just don't understand. So I said, I'm gonna just have so much differences in me and myself. So I was writing the gap and then I said, ooh, I can make a triangle. So then I translated and then I said, oh, I cannot make a triangle.
Oh, wow.
So, oh, wow, it's weird, but I'm gonna read to you.
Okay.
The gap. Gap between Hyunhae and Tanya. Gap between Seoul and Los Angeles. Gap between rice and bread. Gap between kimchi and salad. Gap between my natural skin and my cover skin. Gap between my mother tongue and my second language. Gap between my inherited blood and my transfused blood. Gap, the gap between me and other self. So I trying to make the triangle and then I say the gap. 현애와 타냐 그 사이의 갭. 서울과 로스앤젤레스 그 사이의 갭. 밥과 빵 그 사이의 갭. 김치와 샐러드 그 사이의 갭. 내 살과 덧붙인 겉살 그 사이의 갭. 모국어와 제2국어 그 사이의 갭. 타고난 피와 수혈된 피 그 사이의 갭. 나와 또 다른 하나의 나 그 사이의 갭. The gap.
And you came to the United States when you were 18. What was it like? Did you speak any English when you came here? What brought you here?
Oh, as it just it's not like a book. I think they could read it.
Yeah.
It's like most people like at the time it's like a big movement like 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And 1977, I believe, like a Korean president, like, you know, Park Chung-hee got killed, right? And so there's like a rumor, like the war. And then as my parents, they want us to be in America. So that, like, so we could say, you know, education, you know, better life. And that is the reason we came to United States. But like as a, even though when I was like 18, there's like, you know, we consider in America that we say like there's a dirt, but like, you know, it's not considered a dirt in Korea. And it was, we were planned to come early, but like it was delayed. We like processed earlier. And so that is another really interesting story that when I say, I thought like, oh, everybody experienced the same thing, but it's not. Even like hierarchy in Korea, when you go to school, even though like you're just 1 year older, then you respect your, you know, orders, like just even 1 year. So like the grade is so important. And it's like now I feel like I'm anxious because talking about it, because when I went to school in Korea, I went to girls' school, not elementary, but like, you know, junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, I went to the high school a little bit in Korea. But we all had to have uniforms and then so strict. And then, you know, by your hair, what grade you are.
Oh, wow.
So that like when you are in Korea, they go seventh grade. Seventh grade, like just hair, this much. Eighth, like this much. Ninth, or something like this. So like you came from this background, and then I went to high school here. Oh my goodness, that like was shocking. You know, you could put the makeup and then you put the whatever, and then you call like a teacher, Mr. Smith, you know, whatever. Consider Mr. Smith is very rude in Korea. So everybody, you probably know, like that so many people, some people will call you 선생님 because you are editor of the Rattle, so then they respect you. So then like 선생님. And it was just very hard for me to say Mr. Smith or like even calling teachers like that. And I was 18, so like I was the oldest kid in high school, right? Mm-hmm. But nobody respect me. They call. And then I said, what's going on? And then like you have to move the classes. And that was really tough. And then all kids are like, you know, smoking on the corner. And then like, you know, kissing. Oh my goodness. Everybody that is get like, they cannot come to school in period, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're talking back to the teacher, chewing gum, and it's like, put the, you know, I mean, that was like, oh, I just really cannot believe it. And then so at the time, actually, that would be, this is a good time to talk about, read one poem, second period. I think that poem, I wrote it, and then when I read it, like, and then this is like really relevant to with a lot of immigrants. And then when my children was like younger, they thought like, oh, my mom speak English, and then like a Korean, some Japanese, you know, like, or Chinese, like Spanish and all that. And then later they goes like, mom, do I have accent? And then I said, why? You know, just accent like you. So I think like this is like a really good poem to read. Page 50, second period. I am called to a little dark room, windowless. Mrs. Lopez show me a picture book. Come, I say. No river, she says. River, I say. Not liver. It's a river, she says. That's what I said. River, river, river. Kang, it's a kang. She shook her head. Look at my mouth, she says. River, river, I say. Then shut my mouth. So you're asking me, and this is another part, because then, like, I know little English, even though you study English in Korea, like a junior high, high, it's just different, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was reading Dante at the time, and a lot of, you know, philosophy books and Goethe, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then here I am going to little room, picture room, and then learning how to pronounce. And then it was just like a little humiliating as well at the par, because I wanted to speak, you know, but I can't. So one of the chemistry class, that like there was a problem on the board, and then like, you know, he said like, who could solve the, you know, problem? And then I raised a hand. I thought I could do it. And then he said, like, you know, of course, he cannot pronounce my name. At the time, I was Hyunhae. Hi, Hyunhae. You know, it's like that was my name. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my goodness. I wanted to explain, but I realized I cannot explain in English. Mm-hmm. So then you become, like, a mute, you know. Because you thought like, oh, first beginning, you say, hi, how are you? That's good. But like, if you wanted to go different conversation, then you kind of become, what's the point? Mm-hmm. And then a lot of immigrants, they wanted to speak about it. But then the other person always say, what? it's very easy to say what in our like conversation, but I tell you, a lot of immigrants people, they don't like the word what, including me. I mean, now I'm saying it, but like it's still like what means like behind, like, so it's very hard. So I think communication and then understanding different culture, it is just so important. And then I think hearing other languages is very important. So a lot of times I just read at least one poem in Korean, you know, to just like listen.
Yeah, it's beautiful when you do that. And that, you know, Richard Westheimer asked about, you know, he says, Tanya captures the poetic music and sonic qualities in her English language poems. How, seriously, how does that work in your second language? And really, it is the music and the, I don't know, it just comes out in these poems. And also, it made me wonder, too, about what poetry is like in Korean. Is there a similar like style, or what are the differences, like aside from the language itself, like how the language is applied? Because there is this sort of very image-based sparseness to the poems that you write. Is that a characteristic that's common in Korean? And how do the poems compare in the different languages?
Oh, yeah. It's just like very, thank you for like that question, because first of all, that we are well known like a haiku, but we have a shijo. So like that we have like, you know, 3, 4, 4, you know, so like that you have to like, that is like old form. And then we have like free form style of like the poems. Like, so shijo's like for like, we could say, and then they were changed like to like a new form. So like that they could use it, but like shijo was the one poem that like you write with a form, but it became free form, so you could write any free poems. But that is the really important things to writing English and Korean. I just wanted to tell you, like, just just today I felt like it's so good, because there were a request for like in Korea to write 2 Korean new poem. And so I was like locking myself and then writing that poem, and how different it is to write Korean poem. As you say, we cannot say directly, and then usually we don't usually don't say I, we all omit, like, so then like image basis, a lot of images like in the poem, and not drag images you need to put it. So like, so in just one word, how you cannot say that word but deliver. I mean, you know, we are too, but like we're just very English, very express and directly say it. But if you write in that way in Korean, it just become totally different poem. And as a bilingual, and then also changing writing Korean, English, and then like writing both languages right now, that was just like a very interesting process with me, myself, that I'm just like an experimenter with myself. And then now before, like, I just, there's a part like, oh, if I have to write in Korean, then I just have to be in Korean mind. If I have to write in English, then I have to be just, you know, English, like trying to just write in English and then not think about it. And the process, like, then we're going to read like one poem, Do You Still Believe in Spring? And that was like a Metro project. And then I volunteered, like there was 4 poets was like, you know, doing it. And then Sujin, the beautiful like artist, she made all this beautiful art, Metro project. And I said, I'm going to write him both both languages, I said, oh my God, why did I do it? But I feel like now, if I just write one language, I feel like it's incomplete.
Interesting.
That feeling, because yeah. I feel like I have to express in both languages. Isn't it interesting in a way?
That really is, yeah. Are you going to translate this into Korean and publish it there?
Which one?
The War Still Within, the whole book. Is that something that you
might do? It's the one, like some poems are like already translated in Korean, yes. But like, so then that is the problem. Is it like a translation or what is it? I don't know. Sometimes I write in both at the same time. I think like that is another part. It's just like that. I wanted more experimental with myself as well too. And then sometimes, when this poem, like the Comfort Women, I was to start writing in English, right? And then while I was going it, and then I changed it to Korean because I felt like I cannot give the voice in English what they're going through. So I changed it to Korean. The voice got changed. But like, you know, now I got Korean version and then English version. But the original piece was I was to start with English and then end up with the Korean. That was.
Do you want to read another poem and then we'll talk a little more?
Yes.
What do you want to do next?
Do you think like it's a good time to like read the Do You Still Believe in Spring? Or
Sure. Let's do that.
This one?
Yeah. I'll put that up.
Yeah. This one is like, you know, I wanted to dedicate it like Fairfax High School students. So we had like the workshop with them and through the Zoom. And I think that was just very interesting because I just wanted to give a shout out to all these students. They are having a hard time. And I feel like I feel like I know because I was in high school and then I had like that feeling. And so I feel like I could connect it somehow. Do you still believe in spring? A lonely bird knocks on the kitchen window. Is there still a world? Dessert school, playground, buttercup, lip gloss, unopened. Cold French fries, uncertain future. Hope like rotten lemon juice. An ambulance silence sings, red and white glitter against sidewalks. Tonight, someone dies alone. A patch of lotus, flowers exceed, fragrance, sunrise yellow, tea green, salmon pink. Though some think it dead, it sees can germinate for thousands of years. Later, the lotus blooms, magnificent in the deepest mud. I pray this poem finds in your darkness, hands reaching through ghost light. In the remaining space of this postcard, I write, I still believe in love. 아직 봄을 믿습니까? 외로운 새가 부엌 창문을 두들긴다. 세상이 아직 존재하나? 텅 빈 학교, 운동장. 뜯지 않은 새 미나리 립글라스, 차가운 감자튀김, 불확실한 미래, 썩은 레몬주스 같은 희망, 구급차 사이렌이 노래하고 반짝이는 빨강 하얀 불빛이 인도에 반사하고 오늘 밤 누군가 홀로 죽어간다. 진한 연꽃의 향내가 진동한다. 해같이 노란, 차잎같이 연한, 연어 같은 분홍, 우리가 죽었다고 생각하는 연꽃씨앗은 수천 년 후에도 발화가 되고 가장 깊은 진흙 속에서 연꽃은 반듯하게 피어난다. 이 시가 어둠 속에 있는 당신에게 손을 뻗어 신비의 빛에 닿기를 기도한다. 이 엽서에 남은 공간에 나는 사랑이라고 쓴다.
It was just a beautiful poem. That was You Still Believe in Spring by Tanya Kohong. I love the way you read, too. There's a sense of sort of respect for each sound of each word, you know, like you take your time and move through it in a really beautiful way. So thank you for sharing that poem in both languages too. I wanted to ask one thing. You are Sandra Yunone says so beautiful and true gifts Tanya's voices. Yeah, there's just a beauty to these poems because they're so you know, condensed and so powerful. I wanted to ask you about you're getting a PhD in mythology right now.
Yeah.
Did I read that right? That's something that you were doing before. What is it? What kind of mythology are you drawn to, and what's your focus on there, and what made you want to get a PhD in mythology?
I know, but the tell the truth, like, I mean, like, you know, now, like, I'm just like a little bit of live up absent right now at this point, but I think, like, especially being America, and then I think it's Asian is very invisible in a way, and then our culture and then our myth is not well known, and then well shared. And also, I wanted to learn what mythology that I believe, and then where it coming from, that I am believing in it. So actually, when I study the first semester quarter, that it was very important to study Jung's red books. It was like blew my mind. And how he spent his time going in there and then write his own mythology. And then the project was, we have to write our own red book. So that was just like amazing stuff. And then studying all different languages, I mean, the religion as well too. And we were studying Modi Dick too. And then I was like reading Modi Dick, so like it just like it gives me so much joy to study and then understanding. And then also I think studying by studying, and then also I wanted to bring our mythology and then share it as being there. I think I believe in power of education. And then sharing is so important, so that that is how it's that. It's just like amazing courses. Yes.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. I think this is the 91st episode, and I don't think we've ever had a poet on who focuses on mythology like that. And it seems like the two are so tied together. You know, it seems like almost poetry is like the making of mythology out of life or something like that. And so they seem really, really tied together in a way that's interesting. There's a question here from Sandra Yunone. She says, how do you give yourself permission when you also heard the message that you shouldn't speak?
Oh, thank you. That it takes courage. And then even just that permission is just really, really hard. I still have to ask so many questions to myself. And then I think it's interesting, even when I was like writing Come For Women, I asked so many of my friends and then other people, do you think it's okay for me to write Come For Women? And then, oh gosh, there is the Asian women in this poem. It's like the traditional songs of like a Korean women's like a singing, like when you marry, like, you know, 30 years deaf, 30 years mute, you know, all that songs. Like, I feel like it's just almost like, oh gosh, it's just like taboo that, oh, now that we are talking about it, like, what was the poem that the second poems that I published in Rattle, remember?
Yeah.
The Blood Speaks Korean in My Ear. the Taboo 2018 Spring. And then, remember, Tim, I said, no, I cannot read it. There's
yeah,
a word
that.
That I cannot speak.
I was so actually, when I was rereading that, I was wondering if you would read that and maybe skip that word or something.
That's, I practice it and then I skip it. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. And then I still cannot give permission a lot of times to give permission to write. But more I am being brave in a way, and then also it's not just my story.
Mm-hmm.
When I speak my own truth, that I am helping other women or other people to tell their truths, but it is still not easy, mm-hmm. I could say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a great answer to that, and a great question too from Sandra. Thanks so much for both of you. Do you want to finish out? We're about out of time. Do you want to do one last poem?
Oh my goodness, is the time?
It
almost?
Is. It goes by fast. I know it does.
Oh goodness, I don't know. Okay. Oh, you know what? I wanted to read this poem. And then also, okay.
If you want to read two, you could read two. We're not, you know, there's no, you know, hard limit, but we're
yeah.
at the hour mark.
Then maybe like they should try to like read their own, find the rattle,
mm-hmm.
59, and then read it themselves.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. We could include okay. the link too.
Oh, I really wanted to read like June Snow.
Okay, why don't you read two more? You can read two more. I don't think we've
two
read
more,
enough
like
poems.
63.
Yeah.
63,
okay.
June Snow.
Okay.
Like June Snow. This is like a totally different poem than like my usual poem. 45 North to Manhattan. You play one fine day for me on the phone. Too much noises in your film studio. The silent sound of ambulance, the tea spills, a new pink scar, the phone disconnects, like heaven and earth. It could be our last conversation, the weight of love, the weight of pain are the same. I lie to myself, I am fine without you, you're here, you're there. Doesn't matter anymore. You didn't call last Friday. I pan-fried 12 dozen dumplings. Baked 12 dozen chocolate cookies. All burnt. The taste of our first kiss. I left you. I leave you. Over and over. But I can never leave you. Your voice wraps me in sable. In raindrops, in fire, I fall asleep on the tile. You calling my name, words could feel from the satellite, from the November sky. Turn light on my eyes. I send email, sorry. I can't talk tomorrow or Friday. We'll try one fine day. Our love melts like the June snow. I'll dry your voice, press it like a ginkgo leaf, tuck it in my suitcase.
Yeah, it's a beautiful poem. I just love that. Like June snow from the war still within. Yeah, let's do one last poem.
Ooh, so there's a choice. Mother tongue or waiting?
Probably, well, I don't know. It's up to you. I like them both. What do you think?
I'll give you a choice.
Okay, let's go waiting.
Okay, thank you. Waiting. So talking about the mythology. So like, I just wanted to show you something. It's like 21 days in Korean. It's called Dangun mythology. So Dangun was the build Korea. And then how they, the Dangun, become build Korea. There was the bear and tiger. And the god came, and the bear and tiger said, we want to be a human. And then the God said, okay, I'm going to give you garlic and beaten wood. You go and then stay there 100 days. And then I'll make you human. So tiger couldn't stay. And then bear stayed. And then she became a woman and married to God. And then had a son named is Dangun. So that's how Korea began. Waiting. When I think of you, rain comes. When I call you, you come in rain. When I touch you, you disappear in rain. Bring me a raw garlic and handful of a bitter green wormwood. I will eat them and stay in a cave. 21 days, 100 days. That's how bear became woman. I will do the same. If I can see you one last time. There's another myth. When you fold 1,000 paper cranes, your dream comes true. If I can see you one last time, I'll fold thousands, 10,000 paper cranes. I want to open your apartment door again with the key that you sent by mail. The key still warm from your hand. I want to hang my clothes in your closet, between your clothes. I want to feel safe there again. Waiting for you is nothing. Without blinking, I watch. The night became silver rain in blue light. I will wait for you like a rock on the waterline, wishing you to be a wave and reach me. If you touch, I will collapse and be water like you.
Yeah, that was Waiting from The War Still Within. Tanya, thanks so much for being a guest tonight. Just I love your poems. I love this book. I hope everybody picks up a copy. And it's just great to see you again. Thanks so much for being a guest.
Thank you so much. And if you don't mind, like, would you like to share that where I'm going to be next?
Yeah.
8/16?
Yeah, please do. What did you give me a...
I gave you flyer on the... that would be a great conversation with the three generation Asian women. It's like the May is also Asian Pacific, you know.
So this is Cultivating Voices, Live Poetry Presents, a witness conversation in poetry with three generations of Asian American poets. Tani Ko Hong is one of them. And you can find that Sunday, May 16th at noon Pacific. And where can we find it? I don't see the link. How can people get to that?
Oh, can I send you a link later? Maybe we could put it under my...
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes if you add a link. Okay. Yeah, so email it to me.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. And let me show this too, because you gave... This is a great idea. You gave a thank you card at the end of your PDF that you sent me with those poems. And so you can find, yes. I can put this up on screen. You can find Tanya's book at Amazon. Facebook, it's Tanya Ko Hong. That's TanyaKohong. Instagram, everything is Tanya Ko Hong. Instagram, Tanya Ko Hong. Twitter, Tanya Ko Hong. YouTube, Tanya Ko Hong. And Tanya's email is right there too. So Tanya is very available for all of your social media and poetry needs. So please do get in touch with Tanya and order this book, I hope.
Well, thank you so much. And then I hope to see you soon, Kim.
Yeah, I hope so,
in
too.
In person.
Yeah, for sure. Are you coming back to L.A.? Or are you going to stick in Manhattan?
Of course.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully we'll see you soon.
I hope to see your kids, too.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Bye, Tanya. Okay. Have a good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Yes, that was Tanya Ko Hong with, once again, her book, The War Still Within. Should I put it here? The War Still Within, Poems of the Korean Diaspora. And you can find it by Kyso, or I don't know if that's how to say it, KYSO Flash is the publisher. And the best link, I guess, is Amazon. So find that there. Just a wonderful book and a wonderful poet, wonderful person. So glad we could have her today. Now we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to go to the open lines. So we have a prompt poem. We have anything you want to share, you're free to share. If you have a poem you've published recently, let me show you how it's done before I go. We'll put this up on the screen. We'll drop that. So how you do it, if you would like to share a poem, email it to openmic@rattle.com right now. Just make sure I have it in time, then I can show it on the screen like I was showing Tanya's poems earlier. And then you have a choice. If you'd like to appear on video, you can send a chat message to Skype at Rattle Poetry, all one word. If you'd just like to call in, though, the number is 818-850-7727. That's 818-850-7727. Just call, let it ring a few times, then hang up. That'll put you on my call list. If you prefer Skype and do a video call, just send me a chat message, say hi. I'll wave back if you haven't been on before, and I'll call you. That'll put you on my call list. And so the prompt for this week, for those of you who are participating in the prompt was to write an ekphrastic poem after one of the 10 cards from Hermann Rorschach's original 1921 inkblot test. And you could find them at Wikipedia, the Rorschach test. There's 10 inkblots. The challenge this week was to write a poem based on those Rorschach test or inkblot test images. And so if we'll get to that on the open lines in just a minute. I'll put this up next week's show while we take a brief break and get everything set up. Next week we're going to have Michael Mark as the guest poet. Michael Mark was, of course, interviewed in Rattle number 71. He's probably the best poet I know who has never published a book. So it's the first poet we've had on the Rattlecast. He's published hundreds of poems in big journals. Just a wonderful poet, but he's never put out a book. We talked about it in the interview. And so I don't know. So we're going to try out a poet who doesn't have a book to promote, but we'll be reading a lot of great poems from Michael Mark and talking to him, following up on any questions you might have from his interview in Rattle number 71. And that'll be next week, Tuesday, May 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, I'm going to take a quick break, just stretch out and refresh your drinks and all that stuff. And I'll see you just in a minute. Get all these open line poems set up. Thanks so much for your patience. We got a whole bunch of people lined up for the open mic portion of the show. Now, before we do that, let me share with you my response to the prompt poem. Megan didn't have one this week. She's under the weather. I don't know if you noticed, I've had a cold the last couple episodes or couple live streams, and I gave that to Megan. So Megan had it too, and she didn't write one this week. She'll be back next week with a great poem, though. My Rorschach poems, I try to do a series of tanka, one little tanka after each one. And I try to do it really spontaneously, having no idea, like not planning ahead. Kind of like in Paul Nelson's postcard poem strategy, where I just looked, wrote what popped into my head, and tried not to edit it at all. Actually, I didn't edit it at all. And so there's 10 of these, and this is what I came up with. I'll show you here. We'll read these really quick and then we'll get to the open lines. Oops, I'm gonna get rid of that. Okay, so this is the first card. The dull knives of the elephant's eyes at the zoo, almost looking wild, almost looking at you. The first one. Even the gnomes in the empty winter garden have a secret handshake. Two ants cooking dinner share the news, stirring the pot, stirring the pot. The weight of the shadow looms overhead, both feet coming down. That was card four. God, there's a lot of these. Sorry. Here, slinking away, the rabbit wings of an angel moth afraid of the light. Card six, radio tower struck by lightning, Jesus the gospel mute. Oops, I got the wrong one in there. like two rabbits tied at the hip and hopping hardly anywhere. Card 8. A raccoon dug through the trash last night and found your flag useful. And finally, card 10. A great stag leaping through the fog, so sure it is of its greatness. Oh, that's card 9. A great stag leaping through the fog, so sure it is of its greatness. And here's card 10. What magic must the birds bear, fireworks painting the sky? So those are the 10. And if you're watching the stream instead of just listening, that will show you at least 9 of the 10 cards. Maybe let me get the right card for that so you can all see the cards and I could pull them up. That was my plan. I could pull them up as people want to take a look at them. Let's see. Oh, I can't do that yet. I'll show it here. This is the card 8 that I missed, the two rabbits. Okay, so those are the 10 Rorschach cards. And let's see what you have in response to that or anything else you'd like to share. We have a 509 number. We have Susan Talley, Carla Schwartz, Mike Bales, Brenna Kamarinsky, Spartacus and Agnostris, Richard Westheimer, Nivya Karthik, Brent Stauffer, Gordon Coppola, Jerry Stephenson, Angela Gartner. So we got a long list of open mic poets. I will call the first-time caller who was at the 509 number second. I want to let you know I'm calling you from the future. It's a little confusing because there's a delay on the audio. So you won't be able to... it'll be confusing. There'll be a 30-second delay, and then you'll be like talking to two Tims at once. So make sure that when I call you, you mute your live stream, and that way you won't be confused. Okay, so let's call up the first poet we had in line, and it was Angela Gardner. We haven't had Angela on in a while. Let's see how Angela's doing today. Hey, Angela, how you doing today?
Yeah.
No problem.
Because you were explaining about calling me from the future. So.
That's why I always do a veteran first, and then we'll do the first time caller second. And you are a pro. So what do you have to share with us today?
Well, I did the card 3, mm-hmm. the two humans.
Yeah.
I just thought of, I'm a Gemini, so it just kind of reminded me of that and a twin. So mm-hmm. that's what... I did. And I loved all yours. So very interesting to look and see what
yeah, those were weird.
Did.
And it took longer than I anticipated. So sorry for everybody at home. But okay, let's hear. This is my twin after card 3, I think you said.
Yep.
Okay.
My twin. A mom who knows all the swear words, but doesn't curse at her kids. Her perfect square sandwiches and the stamped out fruit stars while leaving notes with faces full of smiles. The block is broken in her mind. Her written story pressed and ready even before the typing begins steadily. Books all read, 8 hours of sleep, 2 mile run, and the pot roast dinner on the table is done. Everyone's friend and the perfect woman, her one flaw, she's only in my imagination.
Oh, I love that. I love the ending. And I'm a Gemini too, so I hear you. I know how you feel.
Yeah, I need to be like my better half that doesn't exist. So.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for sharing that. My twin by Angela Gardner. Thanks, Angela. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Have a great night.
Yeah,
thank you
too. Bye. Okay, so that was Angela Gardner. Let's call up this mystery 509 number. Okay. Let's call up a 509 and see who that is. Looking for mystery names on the... Maybe Desiree Hendrickson.
Hello?
Hey, this is Tim with Rattle, and you are live on the air. Did you want to share a poem?
Yes. Yes. I did the 9th Rorschach test.
And who are you? Who am I talking to? I should ask first.
Oh, my yeah. Sorry, my name is Desiree Hendrickson.
Oh, great.
Okay. I'm a friend of Tanya's. She actually recommended me to come on the open mic tonight.
Oh wow! And so you even did the prompt, even though you're a first time viewer.
Yeah, I did it last night because I didn't realize that there was a prompt. I realized I could have done something else, but I figured I'd try and go with the flow of everything.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so let me I'll put up 9 on the screen for everybody at home really quick. Which one?
It's the one you did the stag for.
Yeah, here's 9. So I'll put it, I'll show everybody really quick. This was the 9. Okay. And so go ahead whenever you are ready.
Okay. 9. The seed, the flower, the decay. The lines of her body change. Chaos, fear, excitement, wonder. Such a small number for life. The beginning of a spiral, the soul slowly binding itself until a burst of light binds the ethereal to the material. Lines forever changing, gravity fighting to pull her down. Her soul keeping her body in the clouds. Spinning, dancing, the great production, a portal to the dimension of souls. Soothing the pains of the transition. Then slowly the soul unravels itself, leaving with a sigh and a smile when the ethereal leaves the material.
Excellent poem. Thanks so much for sharing that, Desiree. And if you want to call in any other time and share a different poem, you know, the open lines are open, so you're always welcome, and it's an open invitation.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate you having the space for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Good to meet you. And let me add you to the phone book really quick, too. Have a good rest of the night, Desiree. Thanks.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. This is Desiree Hendrickson. Let me add Desiree to our phone book so we know who it is next time. Let's see. Who should we call next? Let's call next. Let's call up Gordon Coppola. So the phone's ringing for Gordon right now. Hey, Gordon. Good to see you. How are you doing tonight?
Tim, I am doing great, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Let me get you going on the screen there. Yeah. Where are you? Because I, you know, it's dark here. I'm on the West Coast, so it can't be. Where are you?
I'm in Bremerton, Washington. You can take a ferry from Bremerton to Seattle.
Ah, and so it's that much brighter there. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess because you're higher in latitude.
We are, yep.
And you're a little bit farther west, too, actually, because the coast juts out. So what did you want to share? What do you have for us today?
Well, originally I thought, you know what happened if you took two of the cards, cut them in half and put them together, and I thought I would react to that. But then I came up with another idea, went over to Rhyme Zone and decided to go crazy with cultural references.
Interesting. Okay.
So this is called Rorschach a la carte.
Okay, here we go. It's ready.
Do you mind if I react, Dr. Rorschach, to the left half of Inkblot 4, front to back with the right half of 9? Don't talk smack. Let's give it a whack, you quack. Don't attack me for taking charge of my mental health, jack-off. I'll dunk on you like Shaq. Pretentious plaque on your mantle, Doc. Let's begin. I see the Zodiac Killer making love with dear Arnold Horschach from Welcome Back, Cotter. Here's an Amtrak rider with a knapsack, a crack megalomaniac. He's about to hijack the train when Ms. Amnesiac gives him a thwack with her compact blackjack. Then her face goes slack. She purchases a snack and kicks back with a Danielle Steel paperback. This Blotto Ink Smack is a panic attack almanac. For crazy people, maybe. Not for me. A cognac and a snifter by the fire. Rewatching Caddyshack will keep my mind on track. You are a hack, Rorschach. Check Twitter for my feedback.
That was excellent, Gordon. Thanks so much for sharing that. A fun, fun, funny poem. Thanks, Gordon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tim. See you later.
Yep, bye. It was Gordon Coppola with Rorschach a la carte. Thanks, Gordon, for that. Let's see. Next up, let us call. Who is next in line? Jerry Stephenson. Call up Jerry. Hey, Jerry, I'm going to mute you for a second because I heard myself in the background briefly. Turn that off. Excellent. Thanks, Jerry. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm farther north than your last guest.
Oh, that's right. You're in like Calgary or something, right?
No, I'm on Gabriola Island
off
the west coast of Vancouver.
Interesting. Okay.
Floating around in the Salish Sea. Matter of fact, and we're Canadian, of course, up here. And in our backyard, we have a 12-foot palm tree. Shh.
Oh, wow.
Don't tell everybody.
Do you have the only palm tree up there?
No, there's a few of them around here, but I love it. I always put it in my Christmas cards.
So what do you want to share with us today?
Okay, what happened to me was I was sitting in my studio getting ready to write for the thing. I wanted to try your challenge, right? Mm-hmm. I like your challenge. I think you know that. And my familiar grabbed me and said, "Hey, you're working on this other piece on Abacith. Do your work, then do that one. You've got lots of time, right?" Mm-hmm. Of course I do. So he led me down this rabbit hole, and along came on Abacith a painting I just absolutely love, Dansen Café.
Hmm.
And it's by, what's his name, Degas?
Uh-huh,
and
yeah.
Also Monet did one. And they're based on Abacith, the drink that got banned in France for 99 years.
Interesting.
Okay. And the painter actually cut an ear off because of this. So the story goes. But here's my story. It's called Dansen Café and the Dance of the Green Fairy. The Green Fairy is what Abacith, the drink, is called in higher circles than the ones I usually crowd in. Okay, here we are. Absently minded, I stutter assembling this troublesome glass, errant spoon, ridicule's cube of sugar. Now to shower them with ice-filled water? Stop! That's how it's prepared, okay? This opaque, white, mind-expanding drop tingles my Van Gogh ear. Picasso's every angle echoes Ernest's lament. A frastic poem now eats its own art. Evaporated too by Swiss bootleggers to start, grabbing the artistic heart, we're sharing its attack. What once began cannot return, never go back. Dega, C10H160. Science speak for wormwood. That's what's the root of this. Your gal from Korea mentioned wormwood in her thing too. Interesting. That's the root of the beverage, but he holds my many impressions on my many wandering brain.
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing that. Have you ever had absinthe?
Once. I did.
Yeah, me too. And it was weird. It was the only time I got blackout drunk in my life. I had no idea it was coming. And before I blacked out, there were like things, like I was hallucinating. I don't know, man. That absinthe is a serious stuff.
It is. A friend of mine did it. We were out for dinner with him there, this was about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Said, let's buy one of these things here. We'll have a drink. And we did. And I didn't get blackout drunk, but I tell you what, I have never dreamt like that in my life.
Yeah, like it was like I was walking through a dream, and then I don't remember what happened at the end of the dream. That is like, it was in college. Someone came back from Germany and smuggled it back. And so we drank, probably drank too much without realizing how strong it was.
Well, that's the whole thing. And the way that it's prepared, there's this thing you put, the spoon. We have an absinthe spoon and one that looks like it here. And they usually have the fairy carved in them. That's why they call it the green.
Ah.
It's, you know, it's a cultural thing. But I was doing something to do with the opioid problems and all this other stuff in that.
Mm-hmm.
But so many famous artists, painters, and writing, Ernest Hemingway really had a thing for it. I remember
that.
What can I say?
Right, well, thanks for sharing that. That was a lot of fun. Good poem.
You're very welcome. Tim, thank you so much. I enjoy your show immensely. Really like the girl tonight, too. That was brilliant.
Yeah, she was great. Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was Jerry Stephenson with Dansen Café and the Dance of the Green Fairy. Let's call up next. Let's go to Nivi over in India before she starts her work day.
Hello.
Hey, Nivedita, how are you doing today?
Hey, Tim, I'm doing great, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing excellent. What do you want to share with us?
A prompt poem. So I was stuck between two cards, and then it was between 9 and 10. And I finally chose to write up about card 9 instead of card 10.
Yeah, did you read about what each card is supposed to mean?
I did read what each card was supposed to mean, mm-hmm. but then most of those didn't look like that to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's
especially
the thing.
Card 10. I mean, like, card 10 to me actually looked like the Eiffel Tower, the top part of it. It didn't resemble any animal skin rock or anything of that sort for me.
Yeah, I specifically like wrote and like had a reaction before I looked at what they were supposed to mean, and I could not believe how like wrong. I don't know if that means I have mental problems or or what.
I think I'd like to say that what most people see when they look at the cards is sort of depressing and pessimistic. Mm-hmm. So I think we can give ourselves a pat on the back.
Very good.
We don't sort of equate it with bats and moths and butterflies and frogs and lizards and everything that's just dank and depressing. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of not so depressing. So
excellent. Well, let's hear. This is A Phoenix Rises from the Ashes. Definitely a non-depressing interpretation.
a phoenix rises from the ashes. The troubles of yesterday fade away like the pink glimmer on the horizon, like the silver diamonds twinkling in the sky. The new day dawns, rising from the ashes of yesterday's remains, darkness giving way to brightness. A new you awakens, made stronger by the troubles of yesterday and the hopes and wishes for today. The new you rises up, victorious from the ashes of sleep, and greets the new dawn. The dawn that has also just risen from the dusky black ashes of the night, relighting themselves to shine brightly on today. Wary as we are of getting burnt, we still face the flames, knowing now the secret it holds, having been scorched twice too many, and rising up from the ashes stronger than ever before.
Excellent. Very good message too in that poem. Thanks so much for sharing that, Nivi. We could definitely rise up from the ashes ourselves. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tim. Have a lovely evening.
Yep, have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye. It's Nivedita Karthik with A Phoenix Rises from the Ashes after card 9. Let's go next to, who is next in line? Brent. Our buddy Brent. Let's see what Brent has. So far it's all Rorschach poems. Good evening, Brent. How are you today?
Hey, Tim. How's it going?
It is going great.
It is. It's been a really fun night. Really a lot of good stuff. I was in the middle of typing something to Nevi, but I guess I can do that when I'm done.
or you can say it now.
That's right. Yeah. I just thought her poem was delightful.
It was. And, yeah. It definitely was.
And I can see from the image how she might get something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So which one? You wrote about Inkblot 4.
Yeah, I did. And I, you know, honestly, I don't know if I would have necessarily associated that Inkblot with a father figure, mm-hmm. but I did read some of the stuff and they said this is actually called the father card or something. And once that was in my brain, I was like, it makes a lot of sense. And so I just went with it. You know, I figured it's an appropriately Freudian response to the test.
Okay, well, let's hear it. This is a Rorschach Inkblot 4.
Yeah. Okay. Father of smoke and ash. Father of mysterious dark impulses billowing within the weather system of his towering body. Father of thunderclouds swirling out of his pipe to hang above the dinner table like a silent, attentive jury. Father of sex and death. Father of a daughter who is probably still somewhere in this world. Father of night fog rising from the black water of the sleeping marina.
Excellent. A little Ginsberg channeling there in the repetition, it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a little incantation.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks so much for sharing that, Brent.
All right. Thank you so much, Tim. Yep. I appreciate you.
Yep. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye. Brent Stauffer with a poem after number 4. And we're just going to keep cruising through the open lines, try to get to as many people as possible. I do have some other stuff I was going to share, but I think maybe we'll just get to everybody. Let's do Richard Westheimer next. Hey, Richard, how are you doing today?
Tim, I'm doing great. We had a lovely rainy day here. So.
See, don't say rain. I get jealous. It, you know,
yeah,
it's,
sorry.
It's probably not going to rain. You know, and actually, the fires are starting already, which is just...
I've read in San Diego. Oh, yeah, my goodness. Well,
right down the street, right in the...
Oh, man.
It's way too early for that. We've been here 10 years. The earliest it's been was June 22nd. And... I don't know. Having them in May is crazy.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. It was humid for the first time this summer, and I was thinking what my friends in California would give for a humid day.
It'd be nice. It really would.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so which one did you write about?
I wrote about, well, I don't know what number it is, but it's on my poem, so folks can see it.
Yeah, I'll put it up.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's 3, maybe 2. 3. It's 3.
It was pretty early on. I got stuck on it, so... It's called The Bearing of a Butterfly. Spot of blood at 20 weeks, a stain, a gathering pain, a quickening kick, then none. A labor of love, bleeding free of me. They called it a miscarriage, but I now see it was the bearing of a butterfly, its trembling wings, brushing blush, rose petal dust in the darkness.
Ooh, that was a good one. The bearing of a butterfly. Powerful stuff. Yeah, and great. And you know, I can definitely see that in the image too. Strong.
Yeah, poem. It like brought tears to my eyes as soon as I saw it, remembering a young friend of ours who just had a miscarriage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good poem, Richard. Thanks for sharing it.
Thanks.
So Richard Westheimer with The Bearing of a Butterfly. Next up, let's call up Spartacus at Agnostris, see what Spartacus did this week. He went after number 5.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Spartacus, how you doing today?
I'm very well, and you, Tim?
Yeah, so what do you have for us?
So I did the prompt poem, and I did about card 5.
Excellent. Let me put up card 5. This one, have you ever seen the movie Mothman? Or are familiar with the myth of Mothman?
I haven't, no, I'm afraid. But I try to associate it with the myth of Sphinx. I don't know if you remember about the riddle that it used to give to people. So what goes on 4 feet in the morning, 2 feet at noon, and 3 feet in the evening, and was human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, excellent. So so let's hear your poem. Your poem was How to Unfold a Human Soul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I'll have it up.
Yeah. How to Unfold a Human Soul. You unfold the map and you search for a maze in a mirror image of an obscure mass. You can feel the weightless smoke of the ink of the author trying to create new worlds. You can see different things in the same dark image of absent words. What might this be? You ask yourself before changing into the frightening sick things. Your eyes absorb riddles, trying to find the answer in a silent puzzle of illusions. You see a moth in the morning. You see a butterfly in the noon. You see a bat in the evening, metamorphosis of time. You can hear your breath. It is not in the image. You can imagine your soul when you close your eyes. You know that it's not the form that is important in art. The space that the creator didn't use will let you create your own image.
Oh, great poem as always, Spartacus. And I love that metamorphosis of time stanza in particular. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Thank you very much, Tim, and have a lovely evening.
Yeah, you too. Good night.
Yeah.
It was Spartacus and Agnostris with How to Unfold a Human Soul. Next up, we shall call Brenda Komorinsky. So she did 9 like Nivy too. Hey, Brenda, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And you have a poem about card 9.
Card 9, yes. Is there anything you want? It's a popular card.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think it's got the most like stimulating visual or something. I can see a lot of different things in there. Is there anything you want to say about it before you read it?
No, I'll just read it.
Okay.
Card 9. You ask me what it is, and I know it is just ink on a page, nothing more. It is a uterus cradled by hips and draining blood, the monthly cleansing of the vessel of life, a pouring out of the excess. I say, holding the shoes long since outgrown, my baby gushes into womanhood. My body knows how to let go, a thing my heart will never learn.
Excellent. And there's the image card 9 again. Brenda Komorinsky, thanks so much for sharing that. Great poem.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You too. Let's call up Mike Bales. Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Nice hearing you. I've tried to call. You mentioned we could do published poems.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I kind of want to remind people frequently that you can, if you publish a poem, you could send me a link to where it is online. You could just share it with me. Tell me where it's published. We'll talk about the magazine. It's good stuff. So anything you want to share, including published poems, yeah.
Sure, there are a few things. The Midwest Writing Center out of Rock Island, right by Davenport, they had a thing where you'd submit poems. These poems are posted in a wall of a coffee shop in Moline that was called Dead Poets Espresso.
Interesting.
And this was also in the Rockford Review, winter, spring issue 2011. It's in a book of mine that came out last fall. It's called With Suitcase and Bag.
Ah, cool.
This poem is called Poems in a Coffee Shop.
Okay, good. I have
the
it.
The taste of a special blend tickles my tongue as someone sits across the table. She takes a muffler from her slender neck but leaves on her coat. I take a sip of the steaming brew while looking at the pink ribbon she wears on her coat zipper. We talk about weather and fortunes to start the conversation. She twists strands of her reddish hair and stirs her coffee. She asks me to read a poem and I comply. When I nod, she reads one of her own and I savor every word while listening for what is unsaid. Time passes unknowingly as we look into the context of our lives. When I ask her about a ribbon, she says she comes to this world as a gift, and I believe her.
Oh, I love that ending. As Poems in a Coffee Shop by Mike Bales from With Suitcase and Bag. Thanks for calling in and sharing that, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for letting me read.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Anytime.
Okay, thanks. All right, bye.
Bye. Yeah, it was Mike Bales. Next up, it looks like we have Carla Schwartz and Susan Talley, probably the last two that we'll get to tonight. Let me see. Okay, here, let me read I'll read Carlton Schwartz really, or Carlton Johnson's really quick. And then we'll get to Carla Schwartz and Susan Talley. But here's Carlton Johnson's poem. This is after number 5. Let me pull up 5, too. Oh, 5 was, again, this is the one that Spartacus wrote about right here. That is number 5. The Mothman, as I think of it, but who knows what other people think of it. Let's see what Carlton Johnson thought of that poem. Here we go. Rorschach Blot number 5. On dreams of tomorrow, flap your black velvet wings. Oscillate back and forth on a night's breeze. Are you a moth flitting to and fro my solitary lamp? Or perhaps a bat, flying mouse, echolocating bugs and skeeters, a meal, a morsel? Or then again, a pterodactyl hovering my prehistoric past back before there was rhyme or reason, breath or even flight to carry me beyond the confines of ground and sound echoing outside the walls of my heart. Love the sounds in that. Thanks so much for sharing that. It was Carlton Johnson with a poem after number 5. Let's call up Carla Schwartz next. I know there's somebody, I saw somebody ask me, they gave me a phone number. Hey, Carla, good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. So I'm better than I have been in the last few weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Are you healing up from that?
From my surgery, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
That's great to
hear.
And
I have two videos. My last two videos on my CB99 videos channel are how to get down to the floor and stand up on one leg after knee surgery.
Oh, yeah.
and how to get out of a kayak after knee surgery.
Oh, wow. That's so one I'm going to have to go watch.
So you have to go watch those. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
But anyway, so this one, I chose card number 2, which I guess nobody else chose, but to me, it was the obvious one to write about.
Okay. Well, let's see. This is the one, and you have a picture of it, so we can share.
Yes,
show
I
it.
Do. I do.
Yeah. That was the one that I thought of as gnomes. Well, let's see what you interpreted it as.
Okay. My Rorschach card 2, the cat in the hat met his mate. When the cat in the hat met his mate, he knew at once she was his fate. They sat at the table, jam to jam, paw to paw, face to face. Together they stood, each on two legs, and pressed like that, began to dance.
Oh, I see it. I see it. That's excellent. Thanks, Carla.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm so glad you're feeling better, too.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And take care. It was a great night so far.
Yep. You too. Good night. Okay, it was Carla Schwartz with a poem after card two, The Cat in the Hat Met His Mate. And next up was Susan Talley. Hey, Susan, you're live on the air. How are you doing today? Oh, I hear myself.
I'm good,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, cut off that in the background because I hear myself, and then I'll unmute you.
I wanted to say that I love the Ekratic writer, and I bought the book.
Oh, great.
And I feel really connected to the idea of synesthesia. And I thought these cards were a lot of fun, and I read about the Rorschach test, and it was never designed to be a diagnostic tool, that it was really all about how the mind works and perception.
Yeah, it was really fascinating reading about that, and that I didn't know he died a year after he invented it and never had any idea that it was popular whatsoever, and it's used in a way he didn't intend. And really it feels like the imaginative part isn't necessarily the people interpreting the pictures. It's the psychologists interpreting the people interpreting the pictures.
And I really resented that they assigned images and I kept doing other.
So you did tile number 10.
I'd like to do a whole study on it. Okay. It's really number 3, though. I made a mistake.
Oh, really? Let me show number 3 for everybody.
Thank you.
Oh, 3 was the, what did we add? Here we go. This was 3. Whatever that is. Let's see what you did with it.
Okay. What was a bongo for 1 is now a drum for 2 musicians. Listen to their heart's connection. Feel the pulse flow down their elbows. Watch their wrists align, lean into rhythm. Shower their performance with red flowers.
Oh, another great ending. Shower their performance with red flowers. I love that. Thanks so much for sharing it.
Thank you.
Yep, good night. That was Susan Talley with the two music makers from tile number 3, actually. Okay. Oh, we got a bunch of them. Oh, so this is Vicky Mikos. And I'm not sure if Vicky would want me to call her right now. Let's see. I think I saw Vicky, so I'm just going to call Vicky up.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Vicky. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you wanted me to call or not, but I have your poems here if you want to read and share them.
Hi. I am way behind for some reason. It's really delayed this time. So Anyways, a great night. I had the same vision as you with the gnomes on number 2. Mm-hmm. So I've got Haiku for each one.
Okay, great. And so you have 10. How do you say
Senryu?
Senryu? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's how I say it. Senryu. Yeah, it's kind of a cousin to Haiku and also Tanka.
Mm-hmm.
Senryu is more for the human nature and funny and satirical and ironic.
Yeah, it's just one of those words that I never hear anyone say, so I don't know how to, pronounce it. Go ahead. I have it.
So
up for
there's
you. Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's only one. There's only one Haiku in here. The rest of them are Senryu.
Ah, okay.
So here we got Ink Blot Senryu number 1. Aesop revisited a sheep in wolf's clothing. Night shift. The garden gnomes, changing of the guard. Puppy love, the schnauzer dangles her earrings. New tricycle, the wannabe biker, too big for his boots. Blind date, Phantom of the Opera, glasses. South Beach diet, Santa's garb droops on the valet. Jump rope duet, their ponytails in centripetal swing. And office clown, the Olympic skier wearing platypus earmuffs. Surf's swell, a seahorse curls into its love mate. That's the haiku one. It's about nature. And the last one, her bumper harvest blue ribbon accepted by a rabbit.
Ah, excellent.
Interesting to hear everybody's poems about these ink blots.
Yeah, it really was, because we're all, you know, doing the same things. The one that I love the most that you did was this new tricycle, the wannabe biker, too big for his boots. I will never see this this picture again any other way.
It does look like somebody on a bicycle. I don't know.
It really does.
To me, it does.
Yeah, it really does.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling and sharing those, Vicky. They're great.
Great night.
Yep.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye. That was Vicky Miko. Okay, so we are pretty much up on time. I'm not going to dig through for more callers, even though we have a bunch of people who sent poems in still. But we'll save them for later. I think I'm looking through here. Let me do this one. Linda Gowen wrote one just for the Rorschach, and she's not here in the call list. But since we're doing all those poems, let me get this in quick. Then I'm going to play or read a poem from Michael Mark, and then that'll be it for the show. But this is Linda Gowen, subjected to Rorschach. And here we go. Subjected to Rorschach. I was sick with envy when I first studied Rorschach's works. Me, a budding artist, runaway, 13, filled with so much blood, baring my fangs. A bear of a man granted permission to interpret whatever I wanted through the ink. A bat, two humans, an animal hide marked with drops of death, perhaps. All dark except the last three. A trio of rainbows meaning what? Not a cat, not a dog, not an alien, not a fish. I saw the last card as a path to Terra, a fantasy plantation that offered an antebellum shelter before the war between my mother and me. Before she pillaged everything I thought I owned. See the willowy trees, the hands holding flowers, the sturdy road where someone spilled life's milk. See how she took it all, the white space, the emptiness, the worms. Oh, that's a great poem, Linda Gowen. I think she's the first, I mean, I don't know if the speaker is Linda, it's based on a real experience, but the first person who possibly took the Rorschach test was given it. Really interesting to hear, and very cool. And another interesting thing reading about this, I had no idea how much of a controversy it was when Wikipedia posted the images for the first time. And this was only 2009, and a lot of psychologists were very upset, apparently, that it was made public because it sort of ruins the test if you see them. And so that was interesting. But let's do a, let's share... Let's do a poem by Michael Mark, next week's guest, before we go. And I accidentally X'd out of my window, so now I got to find a new one. He's been in Poet Respond a whole bunch of times. He's just a great poet. I met Michael Mark at the Wrightwood Literary Festival. And just a great person to know. Let's listen to him read the Roly-Poly Bodhisattva to close out the show tonight. Here he is. This is Michael Mark, next week's guest, with Roly-Poly Bodhisattva.
Roly-Poly Bodhisattva. I have gained 62 pounds since being with my enlightened master. I eat nothing but high-caloric food. Of course, no meat. No chicken or fish, nothing that has a mother. I know my guru loves me, but he hates fat people. He is disgusted by his ignorance, and he suffers terribly. I love my guru, so we have traveled to France to look at the Renoirs. He says he sees the beauty, but ultimately these women are too large. We have moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, where more overweight people live than anywhere in the United States. Each morning I offer the Buddha oranges and my guru ice cream cake and soft cheeses. We adopted a lame dog who cannot walk. so he is quite fat. My guru bows to the dog and carries him everywhere. People always smile and pet the dog. No one says he's fat, I tell my guru. True, he says, but they don't carry him. I am my master's roly-poly bodhisattva, and he is teaching me about restraint, how not to take joy in his struggle. But it is so hard not to laugh when I look in the mirror.
And that was Michael Mark with Roly Poly Bodhisattva, one of many of his poems that we've published in Rattle over the years. And he's a prolific writer. He's published all over the place. And looking forward to diving into his work more. It's just so much fun to read or hear all of his poems. And that is going to be it for the show tonight. Now, as I mentioned, next week's guest was Michael Mark, and next week's prompt is going to be right here. Next week's prompt. This LitHub article, and there's a link, it'll be in the show notes. This LitHub article details the 32 most iconic poems in the English language. Read or reread a few, or all of them if, like me, you can't stop yourself because it's so much fun, and write a poem that replies to one of these works. So the link is there. It's at LitHub. If you Google the 32 most iconic poems in the English language, I'm sure it'll come right up. There's 32 of those. Your prompt this week is to read some of them and write a poem that replies to one of those 32 most iconic works. So this is going to be a response to another work. And that is next week's prompt. And as I mentioned, next week's guest is going to be Michael Mark. And Michael Mark, of course, has been in Rattle number 71 as the featured interview. So read that issue again if you want to ask any follow-up questions to the stuff we talked about. It was one of those interviews where we went on for like 2 hours. I had to cram it down. So there are more stories and a lot more interesting stuff than just what's in that interview. And that's going to be Rattlecast number 92 with Michael Mark, Tuesday, May 11th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope to see you then. And good luck with the prompt poem. We'll do the critique of the week on Friday. We'll do Poet Respond on Sunday. So I hope you have a great week, and I will see you soon. Good night.